we can sit and talk right now, and then yeah. And then whenever you're ready.
Sure.
Great. So would you rather sit and talk first and then try to get a fare?
Yeah, we can do like this.
Okay. Let's do that. Okay. All right, so let's start with this. First of all, can you tell me what you had for breakfast today so I can make sure that we're working all right?
I just have coffee. Yeah, I don't do breakfast, so I just do drink coffee early in the morning.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so first of all, if you could just say your name, like, I am Javed, your full name, and what you do, and what you just, I'm Javed, and I drive a taxi or whatever.
Yeah, my name is Javed Tariq, and I'm driving a yellow cab in New York City, and I'm also co-founder and organizing committee member of New York Taxi Worker Alliance, which is a non-profit organization to help cab drivers and other working class people which are included in this industry, like garage mechanics and other car service drivers and anybody who is connected with this cab industry. So we help them to solve their problems. It's like that.
All right. So first of all, can you tell me basically where you're from and how you came here to drive a taxi? What were you doing back home, and where is home?
Yeah, I'm from Pakistan, and I'm born there. I raised up there. And during my college time, there was a lot of political problems I had to face when there was a martial law government. So I left my country, and I came to America, and I took asylum here, and started doing odd jobs. And one day I saw in a newspaper there was a lot of cab drivers' pictures who was killed while they were driving. And at that time I was studying photography in New School, and I had one project in my mind to do my documentary photographs about cab drivers' life, because each cab driver, he has a family back home, and they work hard here. When they got killed, what happened to their families, and emotionally and financially, and about their difficulties.
Let me interrupt. Do you mind if we turn off the windshield wipers? Oh,
sure.
Okay, sorry. So continue.
Yeah, and so I start thinking to doing project on cab driver's life with my photographs. So I made my hack lessons, and I started driving cab, because you cannot complete any project unless you got involved by yourself. As a cab driver, I can feel what their problems are. So I started driving cab with my camera, and I started taking pictures about cab drivers. And meanwhile, I met Barry Desai. She was trying to organize the drivers. She was working with the CAV organization, is Committee Against Anti-Asian Violence. They have one project called LCD, LDC, that called Least Driver Coalition. And so Barry Desai started job there, and it was basic on to help the drivers. But her thinking was different. She didn't want to sit in an office and help the driver, because the drivers are with their cabs, and sometimes there is no parking available, and there was not enough outreach. Because at that time, a lot of police hate crimes were happening with the drivers. So Barry decided to come out and meet the drivers and talk to them, and she met me also, and she told me that she's trying to organize the drivers. because it is a huge industry. 40,000-50,000 drivers are working day and night, and 70% drivers population is from South Asia. At first she was focusing on only for South Asian drivers, and when she talked to me, it was a really great idea to organize them, because this, and while I was driving, I got experience. The driver are facing a lot of problems. Police is not treating them well, Taxi and Limousine Commission is not treating well, public has no education about this industry, and a lot of robberies and other things were happening with drivers, and I felt that it is a really very stressful job, and we have to do this thing. So I started working with Barry Desai and Biju Mathew to organize the drivers.
Now, how long ago was this?
It was in 1997, and at that time, in August 97, we have a first protest against Taxi and Limousine Commission about harshness of this job. So we had a rally in the with the cabs going from Lower East Side to City Hall with their cabs. So we were expecting only maybe a couple hundred or just a few cabs gonna come. But when we reached there, because we did a lot of outreach, because it is very scattered labor. It is not a factory that you can reach every factory worker right in the factory. It is scattered labor. Drivers are all over in the city. So the best way was to doing outreach, to going to airports and Penn Station and Grand Central Station and Port Authority to give them flyers and try to unite them. So through our call, the day we have this rally, there were hundreds of and thousands of driver came, and it was a really big scene in the city. First time city saw that so many cabs came, and we got our permit from police precinct, and we had a very successful.
I thought the first time it was actually no cabs on the street, right?
No, that was a strike. I'm talking in 97. We have a that's a rally.
Oh,
we have a protest in 1997. Uh-huh. At that time, Barry was working with a cab. So when this thing happened, we saw there is not only South Asian, there is every color of driver. Everybody came to our rally, and we have a big meeting with all driver after our rally, and every driver wanted to be united. But at that time, CAV put a restriction on us. They told we cannot have a mass membership, and we cannot work like that. I don't know, maybe they have some political pressure on them or what happened. So, but we were not angry about their restriction. We wanted to have a mass membership about the drivers and working fully with our ideas. So then we decided to resign to the cab. And then we sat together. We did not have any kind of funds. We did not have any kind of money. We were just a few organizing committee members sat together, and we decided that we're going to have our own independent organization. So, which we got in February 98.
So let me stop you here. Let me go back. Why? So you're saying that you started driving a cab as part of an art project?
Yes. I started driving a cab for my art project, but I got involved organizing the drivers.
And now you still drive a cab. And now is this the main way you support yourself?
Yes. So when I started, I was keep driving, and we were trying to unite the drivers. We had our organization called the New York Taxi Worker Alliance. And in February 1998, and at that time we didn't have any funds, so we all organized the committee members. We put money from our own pocket to make flyers and give rent for our office. And meantime, Taxi and Limousine Commission, they introduced new rules, which was very harsh for the drivers, and so we
I'm familiar with the rules, but what was so bad about the rules? I mean, I know what some of the worst ones were, but for you as a driver, how would it have affected your life?
Yeah, because
speak about yourself.
These rules was a very had a bad impact on the drivers, because they raises a lot of fine from $25 to $100, and $100 fine you have to pay $400-$500, and they started giving a double ticketing for one violation. You got two tickets, one for DMV, one for TLC. And every rule was in the favor of garage owners. Not a single rule was in the favor of a driver. So it was like a crushing to the driver. So we thought to speak up against these rules, and we decided to have a strike. So we started working on a strike, and in May 13, 1998, we have the historic strike in New York City, which shows that driver from 90 countries, 90 nations, are united on one platform under New York Taxi Worker Alliance banner, and it was a 99% successful strike. So until since that time, we are working harder and harder day and night to unite these drivers. At this point, we have more than 5,500 members, and our goal is making more and more day by day our members.
Okay, now I know, so I just met with Bidru Matthew and I heard the story of the strike, but he's not a driver and you are.
Yes.
Right? So I want to understand, I mean, as a driver, I mean, first of all, I'm a little confused because you started driving as part of an art project, but you are a driver today.
Yes.
So, but is this the main way you support yourself? Is this your livelihood?
Yeah, this is now my livelihood to drive a cab, because if I don't drive cab now, it's hard for me to reach out to the all driver and to know what's the real problem driver are facing. So while I'm a driver by myself, I drive, and through my driving experience, it is also now becoming my job. Through the driving experience, I can understand what other driver feels, what is their problems, and how much hard work they do, and how little money they make, and what problems in this industry they are facing day and night. So that's my own experience, and with my own experience, I'm trying to change, to get some changing in this industry. And also because it is a scattered labor, it's hard to reach to drivers. So while I'm driving by myself, I can always do outreach for New York Taxi Worker Alliance. When we are at airport, I start talking to the other driver, give them flyer, and they come to me when they have a little problem. They ask what's going on, how you people are helping us. So it is also easy way to reach out to the drivers.
Okay, great. Yeah. Now you said when we started that this is a difficult job. And now tell me a little bit about how the money works. You have to go to a garage owner, right? So tell me how that works.
Yeah, in this industry, that it is very different kind of industry. Every driver has to start their work with minus money, because it is not a system like it used to be before. You go to the garage, you pick up cab, you go or you work, you finish your shift, you come back, and whatever money you make, you split 49% and 51%. But nowadays, after TLC, introduce the lease cap system, it is like that. You go to the garage, you pay money in advance for your whole shift, and then you take the cab, and then you work 12 hours, and you put gas by yourself, and it's now it depends on your luck, how much money you make. You started your shift with $105, $110, paying in advance to the drive, to the garage, and then you go out and you work. If after 12 hours, if you just make $200, so $110 you minus for your lease, $20 you minus for your gas, and then you get only 60 a day. Sometimes it's worse, sometimes you got lucky if you got good passengers, and some every day is not the same day. So if you are sick and if you are leasing a cab on a weekly basis, and so you pay a lease for 7 days, and if you are sick for 1 or 2 days, it means you are paying that lease from your own pocket. You, the garage owner not gonna deduct, not gonna give you credit for that lease. So that's why you keep working 7 days a week. And it's also difficult for the drivers who own their car and they lease the medallion through brokers. For them it is more hard, because then they had a contract for 2.5 years until your car is paid off. And if you are sick or you cannot go for 1 week or 2 week work, you cannot pay the lease, the garage owner gonna took your car back, and you're gonna lose all payments you already gave to them to clear your car. So it's like two and a half years you are stuck with that car, with that contract, and you keep working 7 days a week, and for your 2.5 months.
Okay. Yeah. Now, in terms of, I mean, your own experience,
yes.
When people get into your cab, how do you think they see you?
Yeah, through my own experience about the public, in the beginning, it was very hard, and the public was not thinking good for us. They were thinking like, we are pariah of New York.
We are
pariah, you know. And we're like people from third world country coming here, working hard, don't know English, this and that. And public was not paying more attention. What is the reality? But after our we started our organization, we have a lot of information for the public through paper media and through TV, that public should know what is the reality, that how we are paying lease in advance, and how this industry works. And we don't just take lessons and start driving cab. Every cab driver has to give an exam to the Taxi and Limousine Commission about English reading, about English listening, and about knowing all geography, and then they get lessons. So it means drivers knows English, but sometimes it's hard to hear from the passenger, because we have a partition in the middle, and you cannot hear properly, so people are thinking maybe they don't know English. But we are all day long working here. Drivers are more experienced in driving. They are not just a regular driver. This is our profession, and we drive it as a professional. And after so many years giving general information to the public, nowadays, our customers are very good. They understand our situation, and they are very polite. They are very nice to the drivers. But still we have a lot of problems all the time.
So what's an example of the way someone will treat you that makes you feel not, because you know, you were saying, I mean, what was your education in Pakistan? What did you study there?
My major was history while I was studying in Pakistan. I was very interested in history, and also I was involved in a college politics. I was an active member of a political party in Pakistan.
So you're an educated person, and you come here, and people who get in your cab might not know, you know, anything about you. And I mean, how do they treat you? What's an example of something someone might do?
Yeah, through my experience in the beginning, I felt a lot of racism, and through a lot of passengers, they were talking very nasty to us, and they were like, because we are mostly drivers are people of color, and night time I had a very bad experience to taking some passenger to different areas which are very isolated or ghetto kind of areas in Bronx or in Brooklyn, and we have lot of bad experience to getting robbed and getting a hit by passengers. But by law, we cannot refuse any passenger because TLC thinks that the driver are racist, but we are not. We, by ourselves, we are people of color, and we always take passenger, but sometime taking this passenger to different areas are very dangerous for us, and we are working that, and we have to go through big danger. And
have you ever been robbed?
Lot of time passenger didn't pay fare and they run away. Lot of time they hit me at night time. They didn't pay. They took money and. Mostly, if somebody take our fare and run away, the safest way is to just stay in your cab and let him go. If you get out from your cab and go behind him, it is very dangerous, because if these people have some kind of weapon, they can hit you. And on the other hand, by TLC, there is a law that driver cannot have any kind of weapon in their cabs for their protection. So there is also rule, they introduced that rules if even though Taxi and Limousine Commission, they're gonna find out any screwdriver in front of your cab, you have to pay a heavy fine. They're gonna consider as a weapon. While we are working day and night, and any this kind of screwdriver or other things, we need to repair our cars. But these things we always, screwdriver we always keep in a trunk. We don't keep it in front because it is against the law.
Okay. Now, I guess I'm wondering. You told me why you became involved in the first strike. You actually are driving a cab because you wanted to be involved in this kind of thing.
Yes.
Now, tell me what you saw when I assume you went out onto the street on May 13th to see what was happening, and what did you see?
Yeah, on May 13th, early in the morning, me and Barry decided we were the first people to come to Penn Station and give an interview. So Barry was coming from New Jersey, I was coming from Queens where I live. And while I was coming, I saw from the subway, the cabs are parked on the street, 6 o'clock morning. While 6 o'clock morning, Queensboro Bridge is always full with cabs. These all cabs are coming to the Manhattan for work.
Can you say that again? The bridge was...
Yeah, so you can see that Queensboro Bridge is full with the yellow cabs coming to the Manhattan for work. But at that day, I did not see a single cab crossing the bridge because all cabs were parked on the streets and on the grass. And when I reached to Penn Station, I came out, I did not see any cab. And I was also surprised that our struggle really working, driver are listening us. And meanwhile, Barry was there, and then Barry gave interview to a TV station, and we walked to the our strike headquarters, which was near to Port Authority, and there lot of cab driver was keep coming to join our strike in our headquarters, and we got reports from all over places because a lot of our OC members, they were driving in their private cars to going to airport and other places to see how it's work. We heard there is not a single cab at airport lot. There is not a single cab on other places. And in 12,000 cabs, we heard there's only 200 cabs was dispatched, which mostly people didn't know. And more than 100 cabs right away went back to their garages because in meanwhile they heard about strike and they went back to garages and they joined our strike. And it was a 99% strike, and it made a huge news in New York City. And it was very successful. We saw that drivers are being united.
So, as a driver, how much money did you lose by participating?
Oh, as a driver, losing money through during our strikes, I lost a lot because I owned that cab and I was leasing a medallion. So many weeks I didn't work. I was just keep working on our strike. We are day and night, we are having a meeting with different restaurants with different ethnic groups of our drivers. And we were having meetings in different residential areas where more driver lives. We were having meeting in nearby garages where driver goes. So we worked very hard, full team works very hard for this strike, and I could not work. I was like paying lease from my own pocket. And while I was making only $40-$50 a day, working 12 hours, so to losing that, 3-4 weeks lease and not making any money. They're like 4,000-5,000. That is a big money for me.
Wait, so you owned your own cab, your own medallion?
I owned a cab, but I was leasing a medallion, which I had to pay a medallion lease every week.
So you
and also car payment, yes.
So you're not a really typical driver, because you became a driver in order to do a project.
Yes.
And also to help organize.
Yes.
So you're not like most drivers.
No, like while I'm driving, I'm also the same kind of driver as other drivers are, because it's now it's become my job. But on the other hand, I'm more thinking about how to organize the drivers and how to solve these all problems. So I'm driving, and also after driving, we work on organizing them.
Okay.
So sometimes I have to give up my days when we have outreach at airport, or we are having a health fair or others. I have to give up my my work and spending that time to doing these activities.
So how much money do you think you lost in participating in the first strike, just for that day?
In the first strike, the day is just only lease money and what you can earn. But while I was working on this for the strike for many weeks, I did not work, and I was paying these medallion lease and car payment from my own pocket.
How much?
So that was like $6,000-$7,000 I lost. But I was very happy that day to see that the struggle we are doing to unite the driver is really, really good, and it's good for us to see that our work is done very good, because our ROC members and a lot of young students, Desi students, they help us for our strike. They put so much efforts on that, and especially Bairavi Desai is a very committed person. She's a great leader, and she knows very, very much about this industry and about the problems of labor class people. And also we have a very good guideline from Biju Mathew, who was a very generous all the time with all drivers, even though he's a very educated person and he's a professor and he's not a driver, but he's a great organizer too. So we were working as a team. And I learned a lot working from last 7-8 years with taxi New York Taxi Worker Alliance. I learned a lot from Bairavi Desai, and it's really good for me.
So one thing I want to know is, you know, the nuclear tests were happening at the time of the strikes.
Yes.
Right? So before this, all this happened, did the drivers ever talk to each other across communal lines? Like, do the Indians speak to the Pakistanis, do the Hindus, Sikhs, and Muslims talk to each other? Was that, or was it kind of separate before the strike?
Well, as you were asking about nuclear tests during our strike time in Pakistan and India, I think the mostly people who comes here and living in this country, their mind is completely different than we were as we were growing up in our country, because in our country a lot of politician or religious fanatic people, they always keep putting a hatred in our mind. But when we came here and we were working, we never thought that we are from India or Pakistan or Bangladesh or from other country. We always thought as a same colleague that we all are cab driver. And I did not see any hatred while I was working during these two communities, Pakistani and Indian. They are going very along, going along with each other very good. And like Bairavi Desai is from India, Biju Mathew is from India, I'm from Pakistan. We have our OC member from Bangladesh, from other African countries, and from other countries. We are going along with each other very good. We never had any kind of back home politics in our mind. We all think as a human, and we all think as a same colleague, and we all think that we all are driver, we all are having the same problems, and we are working together. And like I'm going to one Indian restaurant since 12 years to go and eat my food there, because I like it. So because we speak the same language, we speak, we have the same culture, same kind of food. I don't care about what other people have religion. We think we all are human, and to having different religions, that's everybody's personal beliefs. So we never had any kind of fight with each other. We never had any kind of hatred between each other. We are all drivers are going very good with each other.
Because you are dealing with the same problem.
Yeah, because our cause is different. we are not fighting for Pakistan or India here. We are fighting about our own economic problems.
Okay. Now, Biju was saying something about how one thing, even though the drivers didn't necessarily have problems because they're Hindu or Muslim or Sikh or anything like that, are you Muslim, by the way?
Yes, I'm Muslim.
Okay. But the problem was they didn't talk to each other because it's a very lonely job, he said. That's the one reason no one was talking to each other, because you're in a car. And I'm wondering, have you found it alone, or were you finding it a lonely job before this?
Before this it was, at that time when I started, it was kind of a lonely job. We only meet our people when we have a break and to do lunch or to going to restroom, that we go to a different restaurant and we meet there our people that we can talk to each other. Or when we are staying at the airport lot, waiting to get our turn, there we were talking. But slowly, from our strike, people had one thing to share with each other. So that communicable problem, come more effective. They start talking more about these all issues. Before they were, here is a Pakistani community standing, there is a Bangladeshi driver are standing, there is a Indian drivers are standing, or there is a Haitian driver are standing. But during our strike, when we were doing the outreach, they got one issue to talk with each other. So they got more combined and talking to each other about their about strike and about taxi worker alliance, about this. That thing also bring them together more than before. And the second thing, we also started a campaign with the CB radios. Like, I had a CB radio in my cab. Our Indian OC member had CB radio in his cab. Our Bangladeshi member has CB radio in a cab. And our Latino OC member has a CB radio in a cab. So we start communicating on CB radio with each other. And because of these issues, so driver got more interested to talking to each other. And then after the cell phone came, was invented and came to the market, and so that now drivers are more in touch with each other through cellular phone, especially at night time, because also cell phone is helping a lot to stop crimes against drivers, because now a lot of bad passenger who was thinking to rob the drivers, now they know the driver has cell phone, might be on other line, somebody's listening, or he can convey a problem in a second to the police. And so it's that become also more effective to communicate with each other, and also it's more safety.
So I, as far as I can tell, there were three separate strikes, But in the end, the Taxi and Limousine Commission ended up passing almost all of the rules.
Yes.
So how did you feel when you saw that they had passed all these rules? Did you feel like you hadn't gotten done what you wanted to do?
No, we did not feel that what we done. We were not expecting on our first strike that Taxi and Limousine Commission gonna change everything, because that was our base started from a strike, that the major thing was for us, what we are very proud of it, that we got awareness in drivers, that they should know what they have rights and how to unite themselves. Because before that, there was no union and no organization who was working for the drivers. There was one mafia kind of unions, which no drivers know. When I go to garage, I have to get to my cab. At first, I have to pay $3 in a machine, and get a ticket from that machine and give to the dispatcher. And then I can get a cab. And I ask, what kind of this $3, why I'm paying it? And they were saying, oh, it is a union fund. So each driver has to pay $3 every day, every shift for their union fund. But we did not know who is the union members and what, how this union working, how they are helping to the drivers. And the first thing on our strike, we saw that union, who's nobody knows about these members, was disappear. Nobody's paying any $3 to any vending machine to get a cab. And the driver started talking more about their rights. And after strike, we work a lot to change this rule. And we gain a lot. We got, we stopped the double ticketing. We stopped inhuman treatment to the driver by Taxi and Limousine Commission. There was always big lines in front of Taxi and Limousine Commission's office. The driver has to go to for their hearings or for lessons renewal for other different things. Most of the drivers start lining up at 12 o'clock night, while office gonna open next day 9 o'clock, and in snow or rain, they are standing outside all night long in lines, and line was going around the block. So we took media there, we took a journalist there to let them see how TLC is treating to the driver. And so these lines was ended, and Taxi and Limousine Commission started their work more quickly to finish as soon as possible as driver come. And
so why were there lines around the, why were people lining up at midnight for?
Yeah, because the Taxi and Limousine Commission's work was very slow, and there was more driver to go to their office, and they were not working properly in their offices to help the drivers.
And they were coming because they had to.
They had to. They were coming because they had to. So that's why.
For tickets or for what?
For different reasons. Some driver was for their lessons renewal, and some for their summons, some for putting a name on hack lessons for other drivers. There was for different reasons. Drivers had to go to office, but there were like a capacity of 300 drivers. There was like 3,000 drivers to go in to the office because TLC work was very slow.
And so as a result of the media attention around the strikes, you were able to get the TLC to speed up.
Yeah, around these linings, through our media work, these lines was ending because the TLC is working more fast to help the drivers.
And was this during the strike? Or
no, that was after the strike. So. But in the beginning, the Taxi and Limousine Commission, they did not recognize us. They were, the TLC chairwoman was saying, we don't know, this is a little group of drivers, these are troublemakers, and so. And Mayor Giuliani said, these are taxi terrorists, and this and this kind of comments they gave.
How did that make you feel when you heard this text?
Yeah, it was completely racist remarks, and it was we felt very bad about this because we were hardworking people, and we were fighting for our economic situation, and we live in this country, we love this country, and we are thinking by ourselves, a part of this country. We are New Yorker too. We are serving millions of people every day in New York City. And we are feeling ourselves a New Yorker and a part of this community. And this is our job, and we want to give a good service to the New York people.
And And so when was it Giuliani who said taxi terrorist? I think it was someone from the TLC who said taxi terrorist. And when you heard taxi terrorist, so I mean, when you think of yourself as a New Yorker and then you hear taxi terrorist, what do you think? How does that person see you?
Yeah, I felt very bad to hear this kind of remarks, because I came to this country because this was the most democratic country. Everybody has a freedom to speak their voices, and to listening this kind of comments, it was hurting us very badly. But we did not give up. We keep working. We keep working. And now, Taxi and Limousine Commission, they got in touch with us, and we were working for a fare increase after 8 years, which we got a very good deal. We sat together on one table with Taxi and Limousine Commission, New York Taxi Worker Alliance, and chairman of DOT, Department of Transportation, and we won this fare increase, while on other hand, garage owner was trying to increase a lot of lease, big chunk of lease, but at this time we got a big chunk of fare increase for the drivers, which changed a little bit their harsh situation.
This was last year, right?
Yeah, it was last year.
Last year, okay. Yeah. Now, do you think that, so I won't keep you too much longer, but do you think that the sense of community among the drivers has changed since the strikes, has become stronger or less strong? How has the community changed?
Yeah, the drivers community changed a lot, because in the beginning they were feeling by themselves very alone. Nobody was helping there. But now, that I'm saying, the major thing we gain, the awareness in drivers' community to fight for their rights, that was the biggest thing. And now, if a driver has problem, they right away contact to us and talk to us what's the problem they are facing, what's going on. And now they know that they have some union which is helping them. And most of our organizing committee members, they are driver by themselves. They drive, they always in touch with the driver community, and they listen their problems, they talk their problems. We have every month our OC membership meeting, and we discuss about through our experience all month talking with the drivers. We talk about these all problems, and then we bring this our decisions to the general members of these drivers. We talk to them, and then what majority wants, we work on that project.
All right, now, last couple of things. Do you think that New Yorkers see you as human beings, or do you think New Yorkers have some problem with taxi drivers where they don't see them properly? I mean, because I know many people, when they get in a cab, they don't even notice who's up front, you know? So do you ever feel that?
No, as I told you, like a long time ago when I started this work, at that time, New York public has enough information about drivers. They have only one negative side of information, where, as you see in movies, in almost every movie they show cab drivers as kind of ignorant kind of person or dangerous person or this and that, or whatever media was writing, and they were just one-sided, they were getting this information. As I told her that after our, when we started working as a TWA, Taxi Worker Alliance, we gave so much information to the public through paper media and news media, and that public should know what is the reality. Like before fare increase, a lot of people did not know how this industry works. They were thinking maybe whatever they were money making, that's there, but they did not know that they have to pay this lease money in advance. While we were talking about fare increase, we put a lot of general information through newspaper that why we want this fare increase, because the leases are very high and we have to pay a lot of very high leases. And then public started to know, oh, the driver pay in front and then they come to work. So that's information public was reading and listening, and also a lot of good things what drivers, a lot of drivers did good thing, that's comes in newspaper, and public started to know that drivers are not just a bad person or just working class people. There is a lot of very educated people are driving, because this is the only job which suit to the a lot of students about their schedule. No other job they can go and work whenever they want, because they have to go to school. So a lot of drivers are students too. They go to universities. I met four or five doctors from Pakistan, from India. They were nighttime they were going to school, and daytime they were driving. They have their books in cabs, and whenever they are sitting in airport or waiting line, they were reading their books. And when they finish their schools, now they are doctors and they are doing their jobs, but they work very hard to drive. And so the drivers are not just ignorant or bad people. There is a lot of educated people also involved in driving, and a lot of, because sometimes some people come work for a few weeks or few months, and when they get good job, they leave this job and they go. That's why there is not mostly study drivers. They always keep coming a newcomer in this job.
Why do so many South Asians drive taxis? How did this? Why is this? You know, if you look on the street, almost every one of the drivers is South Asian. You know, most of them. Why is that?
It is. I think why mostly South Asians are driving cabs. It's just because of that as a. As I see that mostly Pakistanis are migrating to America, to New York in last 20 years. Before it was not that. So it's like one person is driving cab, and if a newcomer come to New York, his roommate is a cab driver or his friend is a cab driver. So they got more information this driving and they got into driving. Like all other communities, like a lot of Arabic people, they have these food vendor lessons. So their people come and they start their work. I think it's just because what your community people are doing in the beginning, the newcomer comes and they get involved in the same kind of job. So I think it's just because of that. And also, mostly people which came, they were not very educated, like nowadays a lot of Indian people are coming, but mostly they are educated back home and they are more into computer technology, or their doctors are in different situations, so they just go to their jobs. But mostly Punjabi people or Pakistani people, they are from the villages. And they were not too much educated. They came here. The one thing as I felt by myself also that working for a low wages under a boss, it was really bad for me. While I was working odd jobs and the boss is yelling at me, and I was like feeling very mad. I said, I want to do work, but I am the boss. I don't have to be yelled at. So, like this, a lot of people thinking they're driving cab, at least nobody's yelling on them, and they are not educated enough to go to do any other job.
Okay.
And the other thing shows that our people are very hard worker people, and it is also a very dangerous job.
Right.
So I think it's just because of that.
What were the odd jobs you did, by the way?
I was a salesman in the beginning, and then I started doing construction work. And doing construction work, I was feeling comfortable because at first it is a kind of exercise, because while I was back home, I was doing weightlifting, and I won a title for weightlifter. And it was an exercise for me too. And on the other hand, to make something by my own hand, after finishing that work, I feel that I'm a creative. I create something and I feel very good. So that's why I was doing construction work. But during my study about photography and thinking about this project, I got into driving, and now I got stuck.
Okay, great. Now, so I won't keep you anymore. I just was wondering if you don't mind stepping into the rain, if I could take a picture of you next to your cab, so that if you stand next to your cab or in front of it, I can take a picture.
Yeah,
right.
Do you mind if I smoke for a long time? You don't
smoke. Oh, no problem.
Get a little time, because this time is very busy, and also shift changing time, we keep working, and especially in the rainy day, it's very crowded. Well, today I start work around 12 o'clock when you called me, and at that time I knew where I am, so I could right away wait for you there. But then we don't know where we are going. Like 2:30, I got a procedure for airport. Like the day before yesterday, I got a procedure for JFK, and then I knew that it's gonna take like 3-4 hours to go there, and then waiting in line and come back. So that's why that day I couldn't meet you.
So what's your schedule like? You sometimes work nights. If you could say it again.
Yeah, usually shifts are 5 to 5. 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. and mostly driver works 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. But my other partner who drive with me is this one. What's going on? Thank you very much. Happy Valentine's Day. What else? I will be home around. What do you want to finish your work early? Okay. I will try to finish early if my partner will wake up. Okay, take care. Bye. So actually, for me, it's a big problem to wake up early in the morning, because I'm a night person. Well, for me, it's hard to wake up early in the morning. On the other hand, my nighttime partner, he's a patient of kidneys, so he goes every second day for his dialysis, and he could not work continuously 12 hours. So he worked early in the morning, few hours, and then 10 o'clock I come for work. I finish 8 o'clock, then he go 8 o'clock, and he work till 4 hours at night time.
So how does it work? Does he also own this cab? He owns the cab with you, or?
Yeah, he owns a cab with me, and we split our expenses 50-50.
Okay, so how is it? How can you own a cab but not the medallion? The medallion's attached to the cab.
A medallion cost more than $300,000.
Right.
And, you need like a $20,000-$30,000 to pay down payment, and then you are like a until this medallion paid off, you are stuck with that. So,
but the medallion is attached to your cab, so how can you own the cab but not the medallion?
Yeah, I pay for car. The car is mine, but I lease that medallion. So I have a 2.5 year contract with my garage owners that until my car gonna be paid off, I gonna keep paying, I gonna use this medallion, and I gonna keep paying medallion lease to him. If, for example, today I leave my car, I broke my contract with the broker or garage owner where I lease the medallion, they're going to take me to the court. Are they going to keep my car? I cannot get a single cent from my car, which I, even though I paid 2 years car money, but I cannot get this car back. So it works like that, that at least we are not, we don't need to go every day to the garage to pick up car from there, and 5 o'clock sharp we would be back in garage. So with our two partners, if one day I am 1 hour late, second day I will give him 1 hour earlier.
So most people are not like you though. Most people will go to the garage, right?
Yeah, it's mostly people go to the garage because some people work for 5 days, some people work for only for weekends, some people work for 3 days. So they can go and pick up car from garage and they can come work and finish. They have no, like they are not stuck permanently. But I know I am driving and I have to drive. So it's like for at least 1 year I have in my mind that I'm gonna drive a cab, and I'll see what's gonna happen next year. But while organizing drivers, it is very important for me to continuously driving by myself, because if I will not driving, I will out of touch with the reality. I don't know what's the real problem drivers are facing.
So how long do you think you're going to keep doing this?
I don't know, until I get some good job, or I would have some, save some money and do some business.
What would you like to do?
I would like to do permanently this labor organizing, because that I'm very much into this.
It's difficult to get work doing this.
Yes. But my wife is always fighting with me to leave this job, because and this is also a big problem for the cab drivers. They have always problem if they have family. They always have problem with their wives and kids because they don't have enough time to give to them. Like today is Valentine's Day, but I have to work till 8 o'clock, and my wife was calling me to what time I have to come home and spend time with her. So today maybe I will just make a lease money, but not to make any profit for myself.
So how many hours do you drive before you usually make up the lease money?
Yeah, it's like a half of the day we have to, half of the shift we have to drive to make a lease money.
How many hours is that?
It's a completely 12-hour shift, but mostly driver works around 11, 10 hours because they need a break, they need to go to restrooms, and they need to go to do their lunch or dinners. So they keep break, and they have a little breaks. So 10 years at least every driver work all the time. So in these 10 years, 5 hours are for making lease, and 5 hours are making gas money and other expenses and money for your pocket.
How do you like New York? I mean, I grew up here, you know, so this is home for me. But do you like it here?
I love New York because this is the only city is kind of a little world. And
it's a little what?
It's kind of a little world. People from all over the world are living here, and I'm very much into knowing about the history of other countries and about other people. I'm kind of a music lover too. I used to be a big fan of reggae music, and I was a DJ in a reggae club a long time ago. I was living on asylum in Germany. So here, you can go to any kind of restaurant and you can meet any kind of people. It's a fascinating city. I love New York.
You were in Germany?
Yeah, long time ago, first time when martial law came in our country, and I got arrested by police and got a lot of tortures by them. I ran away to Germany and I took asylum there, and I was living 5 years in Germany. Then I went back to my country when some things were smooth. But again, these problems started, and I left my country again and came to New York.
What year was that?
Pardon?
What year?
I came to New York in 1990, like 15 years ago.
And the weather's not so good today, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's a rainy day. And like this kind of day, driver's business is really good, but traffic is slow, so it's almost the same to economically. Yes, I live in Queens.
A lot of drivers live there now.
I know, it's just because at first I was living in Manhattan, but then my wife, she finished her PhD and she came back to New York and she got a job here. And we need a big apartment. So in Manhattan it was very expensive. And finally, we found in Queens, two-bedroom apartment, and we're living there.
What does your wife have a PhD in?
She did a PhD in social work.
Oh, neat. So one thing I want to ask you is, since 9/11, how have things changed? Just in the way people treat you, or what have the...
Yeah, in the beginning, it was a little hard for us because of New Yorkers, they had a really big tragedy, and so they have a little bit of problem with the Muslim people. But slowly, slowly, it's getting better, because in New York, a lot of educated people lives. They knows what is the real circumstance, what's the reality is going on. And
right after 9/11?
Right after 9/11, it was immediately reaction, you know?
Was it what?
That was the immediately reaction that people was a little bit against Muslims, but now it's better.
So still, were any of your
pardon?
Were any of your passengers rude to you or anything like that?
Yeah, a few times, but it was better that we shouldn't have to talk to the passengers about this stuff. Means about politics, and so we are also, I'm living 15 years here. I feel myself also New Yorker, as other New Yorker got emotionally hurt. I got also emotionally hurt because the city is, I spent my 15 years in this city. And I love this city. So, now, should I drop you here?
Yeah, this is
this
great.
What that is.
Perfect.
All for us to, there's no standing zone.
I will go as fast.